I Just Play for the Story contains explicit language that may not be appropriate for kids. This episode contains spoilers for Bastion, so if you haven't played it, you might want to listen carefully.
Listen, all this takes a lot of getting used to. And you do get used to it after a while. There's three things I'll always miss, though. One, not having to watch my step all the time. Two, forget about two. And three, I miss the songs.
It's been a while. I'm Deb.
I'm Corey.
I'm Corey.
This is I Just Play for the Story, where we talk about, writing in video games. Oh my gosh, we're rusty. Okay, cool. We talk about writing in video games, so you can too. It's very exciting.
Yes.
So we're talking about Bastion in this episode, which is really cool because it's a really, really fun game. It came out in, 2013 or 2012? It's been out for a little while.
I think it might be out longer than that.
Probably. I know it took me a while to actually play, and then I was really upset that I didn't play it sooner because I really loved this game. Corey, do you want to talk about what Bastion is kind of about, because you just played this recently.
Sort of. So Bastion, you play a character called the Kid, and you are basically trying to rescue your city after an apocalypse. It's that kind of isometric, it's a action RPG type game, and it's really fun.
Yeah, it's really I've never played a game quite like this, which isn't saying a lot, but I thought it was really cool because you have a narrator that follows you through the entire story, which is kind of badass. I mean, I really don't have a lot of games that I can think of where the narrator is talking about what you're doing and kind of mocking you when you fuck up, like, you know, when you fall off of somewhere or you get knocked down or whatever it is. He kind of nudges you a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is a neat kind of thing. It makes it a little more interactive and a little more fun to play because you know that might be coming when you screw up. Or you do something good. I mean, either way. excuse me. And I really liked the soundtrack. I actually ended up buying it with the game or after I got the game because the soundtrack was just so good. I listened to it most days.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the best modern music or game soundtracks.
Yeah. I definitely recommend if anybody hasn't played this game or even if they don't want to play it, do pick up the soundtrack. It's really worth it. I feel like we're doing a commercial for this game, but it's gonna be one of those where we like it so much, it's gonna be hard not to sort of plug it. So you play the Kid, and you're a young guy who's going around. You don't say anything. Everything is kind of inferred from either the narrative or what you're doing or what the other characters are saying to you. So you've lost your city of Ceylandia. It was lost during this war between the Ceylandians and the Urans or Ura? I guess it's just Ura.
Yeah, I think it's just Ura.
Yeah, so there's like a lot of interesting lore and backstory to this game. And I'm betting that if you replay it, you get more and more because you can pay attention the second time around. But a lot of this stuff I just found in the wiki, which was really cool because it gave me a chance to just read, and that was nice too. So it kind of gives you a better idea of the world and what happened. But like there's, four characters total in this story. I don't think maybe Rux actually has dialogue, but everybody else kind of is just like, well, the narrator goes like, this character said that, or this character says this, or whatever. It's very quiet, almost. There's really no characters talking, which is kind of cool, because it doesn't affect the story in a bad way at all. It kind of just makes it more enchanting that way.
Yeah, there's only one other character other than Ruckus, who's the narrator, that talks, and that's not until the very end of the game.
Right. So Let's see. So I wrote down that this type of storytelling is a tall tale, because that's what it reminded me of. Like, if you were to hear an old Western tale or, like, hear somebody talk about Paul Bunyan or Jesse James or Butch Cassidy or whatever, I mean, it really reminds me of that sort of thing. You're playing almost a legend. And then, you know, it dives into these different characters, which gives you an idea of what happened. But really, you're just kind of forging a legend here as you go. And it probably has something to do as well with, you know, it looks a little bit Western. The music is a little bit country-ish. And that the narrator has just that gravelly voice. So that's kind of all what reminded me of a tall tale.
Yeah, it definitely, like, plays into kind of, it feels kind of like an American experience, but done in kind of this, like, sci-fi-ish fantasy land.
Yeah.
So a lot of the themes seem like American, like rebuilding after war and like, you know, racism and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was kind of a cool thing because there's not really a distinction that I can tell between the Ura and the Ceylonians. It's not very apparent visually. They look pretty much the same. Maybe they have slightly different hair or skin tones or whatever, but the Ura were magical, and they were kind of mistreated because of that. And there were other things that were culturally different, but the racism seems more subtle and more arbitrary in the story. Like, these guys just weren't liked because the Ceylonians decided they didn't like them, and then they had a war. It wasn't quite as crazy as, you know, racism in this country or other countries throughout history. This was a little more insidious because it was harder to see why there are differences or why one side would hate the other so much, which I thought was kind of, I liked that part because I think subtlety sometimes is missing from games, especially ones where you have an RPG and you feel like you have to get the entire exposition, you know, beaten into the gamer's head. So it kind of, you sacrifice subtlety in that case.
Yeah, definitely. Games are very rarely subtle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about Binding of Isaac, and that's not too subtle. I mean, that's pretty blatant.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem with the nature of games, is that because they're interactive, and you're usually experiencing the narrative as you play it, you usually don't have a lot of time to, you know, sit down and take a moment and think about actually what you're doing. So it has to be a little bit more blunt in the nature of the storytelling, just because otherwise you won't realize what's going on until after you're finished playing. And then, you know, you don't know, like, there's no reason to keep going if you don't have that kind of, if you don't understand what's going on.
Yeah. A lot of people, I think, just write it off in that case because it's not worth trying to go back and figure it out. There's a certain point where if the game's making you work too hard to figure out what it's doing, it's not as appealing. I mean, that's true of a lot of things, but it's a little different than a movie that you can take another 2 hours and try to watch again, or even have somebody explain it to you. A game is a little bit more of an investment of your time and energy.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, I totally makes sense, and I think that Bastion does a good job guiding you without being too crazy and too overbearing with its storytelling, which is what the other, you know, one of the main reasons I love this game. All right, so let's just jump into the themes, because there were a lot of them actually in this game, which was surprising.
Okay.
So we talked about how the Ceylonians were against the Ura. There was a huge war. The Calamity came out of that, which is what destroyed everything. So, I mean, this was to the point where the conflict was so bad that they destroyed their own world, which was, you know, it's a big deal. And you still see that even afterwards, where the one character, Zulf, is trying to get revenge on the Ceylonians for losing his home. And then it said that the Ceylonians were taming the wilds. So they're basically, like, going out into different territories, exploring, and then, like any other conqueror does, they just kind of killed it and tamed it and made it their own. I mean, there's so much of that in human history that kind of makes sense for this story too.
You know,
it really is like pioneers. going out.
Johnny Bufflekill.
These guys were like the, they were Oregon Trail in Ceylandia, basically.
They could only carry back so many enemies.
Yeah, that was a huge problem. Especially the pokey guys that just shoot needles that were fucking horrendous. Because they were so fucking annoying. One of the conflicts I really liked was the gods against the gods against men, Ceylandians and Ura. The wiki, and I think that it said it in the narrative too, like, you can pray to a god, you can curse a god, it really doesn't matter because who the fuck knows what outcome you're gonna get. Like, it could be good, it could be bad, but the gods were completely arbitrary and fickle with you, which was a really fun way to treat deism in the game, because I think it removes that idea of like, oh, well, there's good and there's bad and whatever. No, this is just like, we can give you powers, we can just fuck you over and make everything worse for you, which is great. It makes it more interesting, and it makes that, you know, your own storyline a little more tenuous, because nothing's helping you now. You don't have the power of good on your side.
Yeah, it's very Greek how they handled the gods.
Yeah, exactly. I liked that. I mean, there was that symbolism of invoking idols, and they all have different meanings, and some of them were a little more fleshed out than others, but just things were more chaotic. It was a good feeling for that. So building and destruction comes up a lot in this game. I mean, you start with having the world, having your home having been destroyed, and the kid is called the Breaker. He goes around and hits things with a hammer when you first get to him, so he is definitely a destroyer. And a lot of, I think the first level that you go through, you have to pretty much smash everything you come across.
Yep.
Just to get through the level. Yeah.
Yeah, including like the bodies of your friends.
Right. Yes. It's pretty dark. It's like, oh, okay. But I actually kind of enjoyed that. I usually equipped the hammer because it was just fun to smash the shit out of stuff. And there's a, there's a song on the soundtrack called Build That Wall, and it's all, you know, it's about building a wall that's just going to be torn down eventually is basically the gist of the song. So it's like, you know, you can try to build, but it's just going to come down, tearing down again, which another kind of subtle theme of the story. You know, nobody comes out and says, well, there's no point in hoping, but you kind of get that idea that you can do all you want, but this is still going to be a pretty shitty place because we don't have our home anymore. And then of course Zulf is trying to destroy everything that the kid tries to build up. He's the one that sort of destroys the second Ceylandia that you managed to create about halfway through the game. It's really frustrating because you think like, oh good, cool, I'm getting somewhere, and then he comes over and just fucks it all up. It's a little heartbreaking.
And then all your pets die because you accidentally kill them with a flamethrower.
This game is very sad. So we also, to go with the racism thing and the warring thing, there's a lot of isolation and exclusion of certain people. It talks about the kid's backstory, and it says that his mom was really sick, so he ended up having to go to work and earn money for her, and then she ends up dying and leaving him all alone. So he is basically pretty much alone in this world, and you only have three other characters that are ostensibly in the game. So it's like, what I found myself thinking as I played this was like, okay, cool, if I restore the world, we only have four people in it. I mean, that's going to be pretty lonely, so it's still kind of sad, you know, to think about that when you're not gonna, you can't expect too much from it. And then, of course, the Ura tried to take refuge in the city, and then they're just kind of exiled into different places, and they're still outcasts. So there's a lot of just loneliness and abandonment in the game. There's a lot of stuff going on in here, which is kind of cool. Yeah, and then, like I just apparently wrote it down too, there's a lot of feels in the game. You know, it's kind of like reading history of a civilization that was just wiped off the face of the earth. And you kind of look at that and wonder, what were those people feeling? And how awful would that be to have everything taken from you? So good job to the game for making me feel that way.
Yeah, and there's a lot of small character moments too with
just
interacting with the other characters, and late in the game when you're fighting Zulf and you can like choose to like drag him back to your place or whatever that was. Like that was a really good scene.
Yeah, there's a lot of and again, like there isn't really a lot of talking that you'd normally expect. There are no cutscenes that I can remember. There's no on-screen dialogue. There's the narrator, and every once in a while you get a little bit from one or two characters, but mostly you have these like tableaus of the characters interacting with each other, and the narration over you. But it leaves it a lot to the imagination and just kind of keeps it simple, which I think kind of helped to tell the story, because otherwise it would have gotten cluttered with all this dialogue and craziness.
Yeah.
It would have become a JRPG. Yeah, we kind of went off on themes. Anything else on themes, Corey, before I continue?
No, I think it covers it. I mean, there's a lot going on in this game, and it's pretty short, too. I think it only took me, like, 6 or 8 hours to beat.
Yeah, and there is replayability. I mean, there's lots of stuff you can do in the game even after you beat the story. But yeah, like, it's not super long. They just kind of packed it full of everything. And I think that's kind of, like, it helps that it's simple to some extent. It helps that they picked themes and ideas that are really powerful that we can draw on our own experiences with. And the soundtrack really helped, because there are story narratives in there that are getting told concurrently with the narration that you're hearing. So
yeah,
that's kind of, it's interesting because it's so compact. So since we talked about, you know, vessel characters or standalone characters that have their own agency, I thought it would be kind of interesting to look at what Bastion did with the kid, because you're not exactly a placeholder. I mean, you have your own actions that you can take, and you have apparently your own thoughts and things that you talk to other characters about, even if you never hear them. But you're not exactly like the player themselves is not helpless when you're controlling the kid. You're kind of guided through these interactions, but you still have control over the character. At the same time, it's not a completely two-dimensional character that, you know, you're just there because you need to move the story forward.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the narration really helps in that regard.
Yeah.
Because, for instance, even small stuff like selecting weapons, the narrator will make a comment based off the two weapons you select, and he has a comment for every single combination, which I think is something like 96 combinations of weapons, and
something insane.
Yeah, and it makes it feel like you're playing like your story, but it's still really the kid's story, because that's actually what the game is. Like, until you get to the very last part, he's telling the kid's story,
right,
to whatever the girl's name is. I think it's just the girl.
Zia.
Yeah, Zia. He's basically telling the story to Zia, so you know, it's something that, yeah, it's definitely a hybrid. You're not like Gordon Freeman, who just kind of exists to move the story forward and doesn't really have any real agency.
Yeah, what I liked is when you can go to elsewhere and fight your own... Well, you go through all the different waves, you know, the 20 waves of monsters, and you keep fighting and you earn experience, whatever. But in that area, when you're fighting, the narrator tells the kid's backstory, which was really cool.
Yeah.
Because then it becomes almost like you're fighting your own demons, and you're fighting these terrible memories of things that happened to you. And it makes it more personal. And you do the same thing with Zia, and I don't remember if you can do the same thing with Zulf or not. I should have played a little bit of this before podcasting, but, you know.
I don't think so. I think his stuff just comes out through the story itself.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So you can do it with Zia, and you find out more about her, and then it becomes like you're protecting her and trying to chase all her demons away. So it's really, really neat the way they use the combat with that. Let's see. Yeah, and I just... So I want to talk about the narrator a little bit, because the narrator really was what sold me on this game. I didn't think that I was going to... Like, I didn't really think anything of it. Somebody gave this to me and said, oh, you're really going to enjoy it. And then I was like, oh, okay, well, whatever. Then when I started playing it and I fell off the first path, I was like, oh, okay. Apparently it's not just me that gets to say, well, you dumbass, you fell off of it. Now the narrator is going to be like, you better watch your step. And that kind of, it made me laugh a little bit. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. You know, it's a good experience. And that just makes it a little bit better, because every time you fuck up, every time you do something well, every time you select a weapon, he'll talk about that. And he'll say, you know, when you're going through the weapon levels to unlock new levels of the weapons, that was a dumb sentence, but whatever. When you're doing that, he talks about how those weapons were used, and it's like, he's so integral, but also just, you feel like you're going along with somebody, you feel like somebody's playing with you the entire time. And it really wouldn't have been as much of a fun game to play if it hadn't been for the narrator. He really sold me on this game.
Yeah, the game mechanics are very, they're solid. It's very similar to the, like, old 2D Zelda games. With a little bit more modern action movement around the map stuff. But the way that the narrator is kind of the key element that kind of ties everything together, and it ties together the story with the gameplay in a way that's not really done in very many games, and it makes playing the game a really unique experience.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the sort of thing that even if, you know, once you finish the game and you go back and play it, you're still going to enjoy that, because it's like rehearing a good story told to you.
Yeah.
So, all right. Did we play this game for the story? I know that once I started playing, I was definitely invested in the story. That was definitely a big thing for me. But like you said, the mechanics are solid. They were actually really fun to use.
Yeah. I mean, I started playing it because I heard... Like, I heard the story was good, and I heard the mechanics were good, and that's why I started playing it, and really both hooked me almost right away.
Yeah, there's really a different kind of weapon for any kind of style that you want to play with. I really liked the hammer, because I could smash things open, but I liked the, I forget all the weapon names, but there was sort of a machete that you could either stab or you could throw at things, which was really fun because it was versatile, and it was a little tricky to use at first, but once you got the hang of it, it really turned out to be deadly on certain enemies.
Yeah.
And some of the enemy designs were really cool. Like the one, I should have looked all this up, but whatever. The little black dudes that kind of look like apostrophes coming to attack you.
Yeah.
Like evil apostrophes. Those guys, you know, they fall to the earth in what looks like a popcorn machine, and then they explode, and then suddenly they're all on you, and it's awful. But super, super creative design with them. It was that made it even more fun to fight those guys.
Yeah, you're not just fighting like soldiers or spiders and random stuff. They're unique to this world.
Yeah, and you're seriously fighting back the wilds that overgrew once Ceylandia was destroyed. This was all the stuff that Ceylandians had claimed and tamed, more or less. And now that they're gone, it's just...
Yeah.
It's taken everything back for itself. So all these monsters are back where they shouldn't have been before, because people were there to protect the city and the people from them. So now you're really, you know... You're fighting back this stuff that wasn't yours in the first place, but your people took it, which was kind of fun, too. I mean, it's not like you can be mad at them, because they have every right to be trying to kill you. They're probably angry at you.
Yeah, and that kind of narrative comes up a lot, too, like how the people, that, like whatever creatures there, aren't happy that, you know, the kid's back, or they're... You know, they had reclaimed the land. That comes up like almost every single place that you go to, and it's just like overtaken by, like, there's one level that's just like filled with this like grass, and if you walk in it too long, the monster will like auto kill you.
Yeah, are you talking about the thing that was kind of like swimming through the grass, and then it jumps out at you?
Yeah, that. Yeah,
or spear you with its horn.
Yeah.
Oh, I hated that thing. I hated that so much.
Yeah, the level was tricky.
But yeah, it's like playing I can't even think of a comparison for it. It's really just like you go out into, you know, your yard after mowing it for a long time, and then all of a sudden there are dire squirrels in there, and they're trying to kill you with their rabies. That's kind of what some of these levels reminded me of. And it's, again, back to that, you know, man versus nature kind of conflict, where we've tried to take nature and things that aren't ours, and now it's fighting back against us. All right, so this is going to be easy. What did the game do well?
Pretty much everything.
Yeah. Super easy answer. Yeah, I mean, the characters are easy to empathize with. They're well thought out, and they're well developed. I didn't feel like the story got in the way, in its own way, and I didn't feel like the game mechanics got in the story's way.
Yeah, they definitely complemented each other really well.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we keep saying that the narration is really one of the key elements of this game, because if the narration hadn't been there, it would have been a fun game, but it would have been a lot weaker from a story perspective. We might not be talking about it because it would have been kind of a middle of the road game story wise and just, you know, fun to play otherwise.
Yeah, people probably would have thought of it as like a Zelda clone with like a, you know, twist of like rolling and shield blocking, but the story really elevates it beyond that.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much in it, like we said, there's so many themes that and ideas in this game that I don't think I thought about them that much until I was talking about them just, you know, on right now. There's just so much. All right. So we can't say all good things about it and then not talk about what it did poorly. There was some stuff that I kind of wasn't crazy about. Like, the achievements kind of annoyed me. I don't really like achievements in games. I think they get in the way of fun. You kind of focus on them instead of what you're trying to do in the game. I don't really care if I can kill 100 dudes that are all wearing a red uniform in the FPS I'm playing. You know, I'd rather just go and kill some dudes and get through the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That being said, it did try to incorporate the achievements into the game, which is good. It wasn't just like, oh, this is very meta and obvious that you want these achievements so you can show your friends. There were rewards for unlocking that stuff.
Yeah, and that's rare. Usually it's just like, you know, cosmetic stuff or nothing.
Yeah. And it's kind of, I mean, I don't want to say that this game would have been stronger if it hadn't had achievements, because I don't think that's fair. I mean, that achievements are such a part of gameplay these days that it's stupid to say that they should have taken them out or not gone through them. What they did do is that they tried to make it part of the game, and I can respect that. I personally don't find them fun, but I know other people enjoy collecting things, so that's completely fine.
I like achievements, but I don't focus on them unless I've already beaten the game a few times.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, if you're spending 50 hours trying to get one achievement and you haven't finished the game, that's a little silly.
Yeah.
Kind of look at your priorities a little bit. So, this one I noticed pretty quickly because I'm super uncoordinated, so I kept getting the narrator making fun of me every time I fell off the trails and pathways. Some of the weapons are kind of hard to unlock. There are pretty drastic jumps between the tiers that you can unlock in the weapons, so like third to second is unlocking the third is okay. Unlocking the second is harder. Unlocking the first is like fucking really difficult in some of them. I had trouble with about half the weapons, I would say. Like, some of them I got pretty easily, some of them it was just, I still haven't unlocked them because I just gave up. One of the problems with that was the narration doesn't change when you go into that weapon level. You will still hear the exact same, this weapon was used to do this and, you know, tame the wilds and these people use this weapon, all that stuff, which is cool. But if you hear it, you know, 15 times in a row because you just can't get that fucking first tier, it gets a little old.
Yeah.
It would have been cool. Yeah. Either disable that after a while or, like, have maybe an alternative narrative that you can now offer. I think disabling it would have been fine.
Yeah, once you, like, have heard it once and you kind of know what's going on there, you don't need to, like, go through that again.
Yeah. These aren't big things at all, but I think they could have made the game a little bit better. Just disabling that after a while. It would be more work to start recording more narrations, of course, and coming up with new things to say, but I don't really want to hear about how the pike was used to do whatever it was and poke the spiny things, because I fucking hate the pike. It's only useful to poke the spiny things, and I hate the spiny things, so I avoid them. So it's just, it made me more frustrated and try to play it.
Yeah, I ended up not doing most of the weapon challenges. Especially once, like, I didn't really find that I needed to upgrade the weapons very much. Like, I ended up upgrading a bunch of them at the end of the game just because I forgot that I could. And it didn't really impact, like, how much damage I did or that much. Like, once I found my combination of the machete and the flamethrower, and I was pretty much set from there.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good combination. I think upgrading the weapons helped more if you were applying idols to somewhere else and nowhere. Who knows where. But because once you do that, you give the idols give the enemies some insane stat bonuses and everything like that. So upgrading the weaponry kind of is your only way to really defeat them at a certain point. I mean,
yeah.
You're just not going to get it done otherwise.
Yeah, and I think you have to upgrade your weapons to be able to get through the, like, challenges too. But it probably requires a new game plus or two before you can actually get them all.
Yeah. I mean, it's... And this isn't something that you... I mean, obviously you don't even have to upgrade them. So it's not really a detriment to the game anyway. I didn't really have a lot of stuff that was bad. I did write down that I really wanted to know more about the history and lore of the game, of the world and everything. But that's not exactly fair for me to say, because short of turning this game into a novel that I could read and, like, an entire franchise and series, there is no way. It wouldn't have been interesting if I got all of that dropped onto me.
Yeah, and I can't really see it being, like, a series. Like, part of the charm of the game is the fact that it's kind of, like, Old Westy and isolationist, and if you take it back to, like, you know, the war and stuff, it's going to make the game completely different narratively.
Yeah, it'll bog down the story, certainly. Like, some of it was great about it was that they didn't really go into much detail about any one thing in particular, more than what you needed to know. And I think while I'd like to know more about it because it's cool, it wouldn't have made a lot of sense. It would have really just hurt the story. And again, like a tall tale, there's a lot of embellishments and details that are left out, and that's kind of what makes a tall tale what it is. You don't know everything. You don't know every side. You don't know every angle.
Yeah.
I think I brought this up before, but you only have 4 people that are left, apparently. And I kind of was curious as to where everybody else was. I guess I'm assuming they didn't make it.
I mean, you end up fighting a lot of Ura at, like, the last level, couple of levels.
Oh, yeah, shit, I forgot. But yeah, never mind. Okay, that's...
So there might be pockets of other people around somewhere, like Solandians and other Ura.
They're most likely in, like, different places that you're just not exploring, which kind of makes sense, too. Yeah, that was my bad. I wasn't thinking about that. All right, so that's really not an issue either. And then I had trouble figuring out who the fuck Rux was, like, where the hell he came from and why he knew all this stuff. And I think the assumption is that the kid told him all this at one point, and now he's retelling it to Zia. But he kind of is, like, he's that sort of character that you need, but you have to sort of shoehorn him into a story, because you need him to tell the story, but he doesn't necessarily fit seamlessly in there, because if you explained him, then he'd be weird and he'd be kind of cumbersome, so you kind of just had to be like, well, just take it for granted that Rux is here and he exists.
Yeah, I kind of got the impression that he, like, worked on the whatever floating island place that you live on is called.
Yeah.
Like, the, because it had the weapon that could, like, reverse.
Yeah, time. He was the blacksmith. He was part of the armory.
Yeah, but, maybe. Like, beyond that, they didn't really explain him.
No. He probably had the least exposition of any character. For a while, I thought he was the older version of the kid, which led to some really weird time travel theories, which, again, didn't get explained, so it didn't kind of fit, but that's what I thought for a while. It would have been a little weird.
Yeah.
It would have explained why he knew so much about the kid, though.
That is also true.
Anything else bad that you can think about this game?
Narratively, no. Gameplay-wise, I found the isometric viewpoint kind of hard to navigate with mouse and keyboard, and I kept accidentally falling off the walls. It ended up being so bad that I, like, equipped a tonic to, like, negate fall damage because I kept, like, nearly killing myself from falling off.
Yes. Yeah, I had trouble with that, too. This is not a game that is easy to play while drunk, either. It does not actually make your hand-eye coordination better.
No.
It makes it a lot harder. No. so gameplay-wise, yeah, I agree. I had trouble with that, too. I don't think... I mean, for me, I'm always quick to discount that because I'm so spastic anyway, but, you know, it might have been a little slightly awkward the way they developed it. All right, so crazy, like, other thoughts. I mean, I think we both agree that this game was not bad. It was fantastic. It's not like we're... I don't think you're going to find a lot of people that were bored by this game if they like this sort of thing. If they don't like RPGs, then they're not going to like it. But if you like RPGs, you'll definitely like it.
Yeah.
So, I did find some fan fiction, which was...
Oh, God.
Yeah. It was upsetting. Not upsetting. As it was all just, fan it was fiction is. Yeah. So, it wasn't weird or gross. It was just disappointing. Like, it was just shittily written. It was like they tried to just retell the entire story of Bastion, which is not how you write fan fiction, guys. You don't just rewrite it with different words and less vocabulary and more misspellings. That's not how any of that works. You're supposed to at least have all the characters have an orgy or something, or turn into vampires and then have an orgy. But none of that, like, completely failed on that front with the Bastion fan fiction.
I am very surprised you didn't find any orgy fan fiction for Bastion.
So I didn't look super hard either. I just went to fanfiction.net. But no, I didn't find any sexual whatever. The most I could find was, like, the kid almost kisses Zia. Ooh, like, whatever. I was having trouble figuring out if... I think it's just that this story is so tightly written, like, well-written and put together and everything like that, and it kind of is such a good closed loop that it's really hard to spawn anything off of it, which is usually what fan fiction does. It takes one idea and then spins out a different storyline. But I didn't see a lot of that in these fan fiction stories. It was mostly just like, oh, well, this part happens, and maybe we'll go into a little more detail of this one scene in the game. But mostly it was disappointing. I was really... I mean, relieved, but, you know, still disappointed by the fanfiction community. You guys got to step it up. Can't just all be like Sonic Slackers. And... Yeah, can't just be the president and Sonic getting it on all the time, guys. Come on. Got to have new stuff there, too.
Yeah, throw the kid in there.
No, don't. Poor kid. Something that I was thinking about with this was... I talked to somebody that was playing Transistor. I haven't played Transistor yet, but it's made by the same studio as Bastion, and it has the same kind of thing where somebody is... You don't really have a narrator in Transistor. You have somebody that's helping you out. It's more of a companion kind of narrator. And one thing that they said was, Transistor was fun, it's a good game, but it doesn't have the same kind of charm that Bastion does. And I think... I don't think it's easy to replicate that, and I don't think that they should have made Transistor a copy, a sci-fi copy of Bastion, but it seems like they kind of missed the mark a little bit and made Transistor slightly weaker. And I haven't played it, so I can't say for sure, but that's the sort of thing that I heard, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I own Transistor, but I haven't played it yet.
Yeah. I'd really like to, but it looks like they just didn't... I think the main grievance that I heard was that they didn't handle the instructions for gameplay the same way that they did with Bastion. Like, Bastion is pretty intuitive as to what you're supposed to do, and the narrator definitely greases the wheels as far as telling you how to play the game better, but it seems like with Transistor it was very blatant, like, we're going to pause the storyline so that we can explain how these controls work and everything like that, and it kind of takes you out of the story, which is... I mean, it's hard to avoid that, but it is kind of sad that the same studio wasn't able to manage it a second time, and maybe a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's it. I mean, I wrote down that some of the potions are interesting, because they have, like, crazy, silly names, and they give you weird powers and everything. I've loved the werewolf whiskey. I equipped that pretty much every time, because it saved my life a lot. But that sort of thing was kind of fun. And the comments for a lot of those potions and tonics that you can get are really fun to listen to, too.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of audio in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so that was Bastion. Lovely game. Please go play it if you haven't and you like RPGs. Give it a try if you don't like RPGs. It could be the one RPG in the entire world that you actually like, because it is a really different kind of way of telling a story, so you really might enjoy it. And it's beautiful, and the soundtrack is great, and you get to play in a Western.
Yeah.
Always count on you, Corey, for witty retorts and everything. Alright, cool. So, we are Deb and Corey.
That's me.
Yes, it is you. Would you like to tell our lovely listeners where you can talk to us, talk at us?
Sure. You can speak at us at deb@bottledfuchsia.com or corey@bottledfuchsia.com.
We would love to hear suggestions for future episodes, comments as to how we're doing. We can try to answer questions. Whatever. Love to hear from you guys. It would be really cool. We're definitely trying to get back into an every other week schedule. Hopefully, both our jobs are going to slow down a little bit. Corey's getting settled at his new place, so that's good, too. And, you know, mostly it's just trying to balance having full-time jobs and making a podcast at the same time. So we're doing what we can. We're trying to get back on track. Hopefully it'll work before the holidays come up.
Yeah.
It's always rough. I was going to say... So the next one, I wrote down game franchises because that was probably what we were talking about at the time. I think it's actually going to be old school games. So we're going to be talking about, I think, the first Zelda, the first two Final Fantasies. There was something else, I think, as well, but it might have been just those three games. Talking about how old games actually told stories, because it was way, way different than what they do now.
Way, way old.
Yeah, so I think that's it. Go play games and enjoy the stories and go read a book, damn it.
Yeah, you nerds.
Geek. All right, see you guys later. Bye.
Bye.